Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show. I'm your host, Phil Huff, and our usual co-host, Julie Calamine, is off somewhere fishing, I think down in Argentina.
Argentina.
Carrie Logan sitting in this morning. Good morning, Carrie.
Good morning. Nice to be here, Phil.
Yeah, it's great to see you. It's been a while since we've worked together.
It has been.
And it's a fine morning. We've got a great show, a lot of subject matter to cover, so we're going to not do too much of an intro here other than to talk about the weather and how that'll set us up for a talk about how weather plays into mental health issues in North Idaho, especially at this time of year. As you might guess, it looks like mostly rain. Today is area fog, then a chance of rain, 30%, with a high of 42. It sure seems more like spring breakup than February.
I'm waiting for those little bulbs to peek through on the bare ground right now.
Driveway's getting all soft. Tonight, rain and snow likely, 60% chance, a low of 34. We still aren't even getting down to freezing. Tomorrow, we have a chance of rain, snow, and then a chance of rain, a high of 41. Wednesday night, rain likely. Thursday, rain likely. Friday or Thursday night, we move back into lower temperatures, a low of 25, a chance of snow. Skiers will like that going into the weekend. But then it softens up a bit Friday, a high of 35. So there we have the week at a glance, weather-wise.
There you go. I guess it snowed an inch up at Schweitzer last night. So my husband is on the way to capture one of those good runs, I guess.
So he's not even listening to you.
No, he's listening on the way up.
Well, yeah. For our regular listeners, you'll know that we record and then later podcast all of our shows. So for folks who heard about the show just too late, they can download that podcast later in the week.
Absolutely.
We're going to talk about community mental health, some of the issues surrounding that, and some of the opportunities to address that in a positive way. Back on the show is Amanda Thomas. Good morning, Amanda.
Good morning. Thanks for having me again.
And Dr. Joe Wassef. And I'll let you both introduce yourself and your credentials because you'll run through them with greater ease.
Absolutely. I'm Amanda Thomas, and I'm a board member for Idaho Association of Marriage and Family Therapy, and I have a master's in phys ed, and I also have a licensed associate master's marriage and family therapy. And I brought in Dr. Joe Wassef, our newest addition to the community, even though he's lived here for a very long time. Well, and he's going to be starting at Bonner General, so I'm going to let him take over.
Thanks, Amanda. And thanks, Phil, for having me on the show.
Oh, welcome.
As Amanda said, I'm a licensed psychologist, and I have lived in Sandpoint for a number of years, but haven't worked here. I've worked out of town. And most recently, I'm currently working in Coeur d'Alene as a clinical director at a residential treatment center, working with adolescents and young adults. But as of next month, I'm very excited to announce that on March 19th, I will be beginning at Bonner General Hospital as a staff psychologist.
Sounds like a very fast-filled life.
Yeah, there's a lot of change and transition, absolutely.
So let's start. Tell us a little bit more about the job you currently have at Intercept.
That's right, yeah. So we serve adolescents and young adults, as well as their families. And we have folks come in from all across the country, but even across the world, really, to receive top-notch mental health services. In particular, we work with folks that have struggled with a variety of different issues, anxiety, depression, substance abuse, mm-hmm. trauma, even more significant issues than that, thought disorders. Do remarkable work and get folks into a place of recovery that for a lot of families didn't feel like was possible. And in particular, we most folks stick around for anywhere from 6 months to years, really, see tremendous growth.
And as you move into Bonner General, tell us about how that looks similar or different.
Well, it's similar in the sense that it's in the mental health industry, but it's dramatically different. I won't be working in a residential capacity. It's more outpatient, traditional therapy. Kind of when you think about going to somebody's office 1 hour a week, that's more of what it will look like, but serving a wider range of individuals from folks that are 11 years old up through, through the range.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. So the genesis for this show starts back in late December. We had Amanda on to talk about issues particular to the holiday season and reflected a little bit then on how the early spring, February, March, is also a particularly acute time for addressing some of the community health issues. Yeah. Amanda, take it from there.
Well, I was thinking about it after our conversation, and you're like, well, why don't we have you back on in the springtime? And I was like, well, that would be great, but let's see if we can do some prevention. So today, when I was talking to Phil, I was like, you know, I really want to talk about how can we prevent the spike in mental health crises in the springtime. And so that was really important to me. And so I contacted you guys and said, let's get in. And you're like, well, who else can you bring? And I said, well, we've got a new addition, so let's bring Joe. And really want to talk more about get into therapy if you have any worry or concern about yourself or a loved one or a friend. Get yourself into counseling. We have a great community of licensed providers in our community. And I think that, you know, as we talked about in December, we are a highly skilled community. And so let's use them and let's access them as much as possible as soon as we can.
So what do you think are some of the reasons for the spike that you see in this time of the year?
What the research shows us, we're not actually very clear about it, but we do see some sort of connection between like allergens in our nervous system getting activated and turned on by daylight and that sort of thing. So.
Are we still seeing some of the effects of the seasonal affective disorder?
Well, I don't know, Joe, if you want to talk about that, but I don't see it as much as the seasonal affect disorder as I see it as their nervous system has kind of been suppressed and turned off. And then all of a sudden it gets turned on and they don't have the skills and it's like they get energized. Like maybe they were kind of, we talk about the nervous system kind of going into an immobilized shutdown phase, and that's kind of like winter. And then as the light comes on and the allergens show up, we see the nervous system elevate and activate. And so it's a mobilizing factor. So if you're experiencing internal distress, you're going to be more likely to be active to do something about that. And we're just hoping that we can get people actively moving into therapy.
So are you seeing this with people just across the board or more concentrated in any particular populations? For instance, my work history was with the chronic and severely mentally ill. So people with schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, major depression, etc. So are you seeing it in all of the demographics or just in particular? What are you seeing?
Yeah, certainly folks that have a history of more significant mental illness are at greater risk. But across the board, I mean, luckily, the research has been able to show the connection between the mind-body, right? Mm-hmm. So as folks feel more pain, and the allergens tend to trigger more illnesses, and if we're experiencing more pain and suffering physically, we're going to experience it more emotionally and mentally as well. So hence why spring tends to trigger more things biologically that make us not feel as well.
So what are some of the things that folks can do for themselves or others they see? Are there some general things like get outside and exercise? Seems like it would be really helpful.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the nice things about living in Sandpoint, right? Is the opportunity for recreation is pretty plentiful. And the opportunity to be physical in a way that, you know, some other parts of the country don't really have this time of year is really a blessing for us.
And I'd say just as the marriage and family therapist, I'm always coming back to this, which is connection. Mm-hmm. Connect with people, being able to talk about it. And I think we talked about that in December, which is how do you talk to somebody who you're worried about and concerned with? And that's a really important piece of the puzzle. And all of the research is really showing high levels of mental health success, addiction success, family distress success, recovery really is about being able to find friends and family that you can speak openly to and professionals who can help you sort through that. Mm-hmm. And so that's really connectivity.
So let's also talk about the family connection, not only for those who have a need seeking out family, but for families who might look at other members with an eye to, are there those that have needs?
Absolutely. So specifically what I'd like to say is just if you yourself are worried and concerned and you have a worry or concern about somebody else in your family, you can just start with you and get to a professional provider, and they will help you walk through all of the different ways to support that loved one. They'll also help figure out ways to talk to that loved one if you can't bring them in. But that support in and of itself, it's a drop in the pond that really creates a positive ripple effect across your family and mm-hmm. also across the community. So do you have any thoughts on that, Joe?
Yeah, I think you used the word earlier, prevention.
Yeah.
And it's so much easier to make small changes earlier than big changes later. Mm-hmm. And there's still a lot of stigma when it comes to mental health. I think we could probably do an entire show just on mm-hmm. that topic alone. And as Amanda pointed out, just earlier intervention, the sooner we recognize that there's something wrong or something that doesn't feel healthy within me or within the system, a change within me can affect all those around me.
So what are the signs? What are some of the signs, at least, to look for that might signal there's a problem?
Yeah, depending on what the issue is, there's a variety of different things. But certainly, when you said connection, it makes me think of the opposite, isolation, right? When we're talking about depression, a lot of the interventions that counter depression are what's called opposite action, doing the opposite of what it feels like I want to do. So sometimes if someone's depressed, you just want to lay around on the couch, or you want to eat a lot or nothing at all, or you don't want to really go out and do the things that were once enjoyable, but those are the things that are going to help you feel better. So oftentimes, if someone is just disengaged from normal activity that they wouldn't otherwise be involved in, that's a clear sign.
Yeah, and just watching, again, coming back to kind of the biology of things is coming back to, like Joe was saying, sleeping, activity, eating, social engagements, activities that they used to love and enjoy doing that they don't do anymore. If you feel like Joe and I were kind of talking about it and prepping of, the difference between looking at children and adolescents versus looking at adults. And I think that's a really key part that maybe Joe can touch on. But looking at, if your friends are kind of hunkered down and not coming out to your usual birthday parties or events or whatever, then that's probably a good opportunity to call them and say, hey, let's go have a coffee or let's go for a walk.
Hmm. Would the opposite be true if they skip too many work days to ski on the mountain? Is that a sign of a problem?
Well, Phil, I think that skiing is a way to connect with my friends. Last time I noticed.
But every day.
Well, it's physical activity, Phil. Come on. Good. We're getting out there. Yeah. We're in the sunshine. Yeah. It's usually sunny up there.
Yeah. That's true.
But Joe, do you want to talk about the difference between I know you were talking about that, the difference between adolescents and adults. Like you kind of had some kind of key pieces.
I think this can go out to the parents listening in particular. Mm-hmm. What we would normally see in adults as far as warning signs is somewhat different in children and adolescents. And that's been my background for a number of years is working with those that are a little bit younger that show up a little bit different. And in particular, when it comes to things like suicide prevention, this is a topic of conversation that gets brought up all the time. Because where adults have that formal thought and logical thinking, and especially folks that are older, will go through these ritualistic patterns and behaviors of sort of preparing for the afterlife and giving things away or writing notes. Children don't really think that way, right? And so what otherwise you might not think are the same warning signs. Remember that, a child has only been living, 11, 12, 13 years. And so they won't have the same formal thought process. So things can get scary earlier without as many warning signs. So even if there's just some question and you end up going to a mental health professional for one session, that might make all the difference in the world to just double check. Is this what I think it is? Is it more concerning or really it was nothing?
So the impulsivity that comes along with adolescence and pre-adolescent behavior. Yeah. You're probably aware that in town at the high school in the last 3 years, mm-hmm. there's been, I'm not going to call it an epidemic, that's a little too broad, but a number of suicides. The urban conversation is, there was no indication that kind of thing was happening. So I'm wondering, in the scope of of your new practice at the hospital, will there be any ability to educate and work with the high school population as a whole, not in, just individually, but will you be able to do, you know, any auditorium talks or whatever it be to help kind of open that conversation and give some additional tools to kids so that we aren't faced with the front page of another kid suiciding?
Well, in fairness, I think the scope of the practice is still being somewhat developed.
Okay, defined.
And you know, I would hesitate to say exactly what it would be without talking with my supervisor.
Well, why
first.
Don't you just push
but,
for that? Okay.
But let's just go ahead and say that that's a great idea. And let's come back to it. But adolescents in particular, you know, working in a treatment facility is a microcosm of like a larger community like Sandpoint. And what's, you know, beautiful and scary about a community like that is that optimism can spread rapidly and hope can spread rapidly. But on the flip side, something like suicide can get into a community and replicate and become a pattern that is hard to get out of and absolutely requires intervention and not just the mindset that it'll go away on its own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the challenges that the this local problem exacerbates or highlights really is that even in larger communities, in the community that is the high school, in a community that is in some ways so tight-knit or families, there are still going to be individuals that isolate. And you know, how do we reach them? How do we keep an eye out for those who maybe don't have family, who maybe don't have the numerous social interactions, who maybe live for years in town without really being a townie?
Yeah, that was a nice plug there. I mean, that's part of the issue that we're talking about here, right? And it's one of the reasons why I applaud the professionals that are in the school system already. I would love to see us be able to provide more resources. I think communication is ultimately what's going to help. When someone doesn't feel like they're able to have a voice, we have to have a voice for them. And that requires peers to have a voice for their peers and say, gosh, I'm really worried about this person, and being able to encourage that kind of talk as opposed to feeling like, again, there's a stigma and either I'm going to get reprimanded for it or socially reprimanded. We've got to sort of change the culture and system.
So it's tied in too with combating that bootstrap mentality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks for saying that.
Yeah. And I think we talked about that last time, was that everybody, there's like this old theory out there that we shouldn't, if we talk about suicide, suicides will happen. And that's again, what Joe was talking about, is you can either have a positive contagion or you can have a negative contagion. And so how are we talking about suicide, internal distress, mental distress, within our population, both in the middle school, the high school, and throughout our community? And that's really the piece that I was really adamant about when I called Joe and I said, you know, we really got to change the conversation, because any little stress, any little worry, anything that you feel like all of a sudden you're getting hijacked emotionally, that's a stress. Seek support, seek help, even if it's one session. Even if it's one session, go and have a session with a professional and, you know, get some support for it, because crisis is hard to respond to. And so we really want to try and get people in. If you have any little wiggle, intuitive sense inside of yourself about yourself or somebody else, go. Ask for help. So go to your school counselors. Go to your resource officer. Go to a teacher. I hear a lot of kids who are really scared to go ask for help and support. And I think that that's really a concern for me as I sit in my private practice office, is that I hear a lot of these kids are scared to ask for support and help from somebody.
So let's talk about the benefit of some of the counseling and other services and how that can help.
Mm-hmm. The benefit is really, number one, you get to speak to somebody who doesn't really have a dog in the fight, right? Just somebody who cares about you and is connecting to you and really wants to hear what's going on inside of you. Professional you know, professional clinicians, we have a large toolbox that we can choose from in terms of how to support a young person or an adult or a family or a couple. And if you can't get into a professional provider, at least go to a teacher or your school counselor, even your primary care physician, a pastor, a family friend, and start talking. And it's hard. It's really, really hard. But if we can just kind of connect into that and find people who can listen to us and be with us in our stress, that's the number one predictor of change.
Mm-hmm. Those are really good suggestions, Amanda. I think sometimes one of the barriers to people finding someone to talk to is that in that conversation, it may reveal those secrets that families keep.
Absolutely.
And that's a really, really frightening thing, especially for a kid.
Absolutely.
And so finding that safe place where, gosh, if I talk to them, they're probably going to call the cops about the fact that my parent is sexually abusing me or whatever it be. And, and sometimes there aren't any of those issues. You know, sometimes there aren't any of those issues. But yeah, finding that person to talk to is incredibly important. I know at the high school they have a mentoring program, and I don't know that much about it. But and it's not an academic mentoring program. It's a relationship mentoring program. And that'd be interesting to talk with somebody from the high school, too, about what they're providing there.
I think that sounds like a whole future show.
Absolutely. We keep on digging into those, aren't we?
There's a lot of future.
I scratched the surface. But I think that one of the things, and you brought it up, which is this, not everybody has a sexual abuse case or a physical abuse case or a neglect case, that there's also these, you know, when we look at support as a professional provider, we're always looking at the continuum. Yes, absolutely. These are, there's actually a smaller number of people who are in crisis, but there's a larger number of people who are still suffering inside. And how do we get to somebody? We get to a professional provider, you know, yes, absolutely through the schools, but your healthcare plan. Going to your healthcare, your whoever, your Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Regents, whoever it is, call your healthcare coverage and find out who's on your panel, and see if you can get that. A lot of employers have employee assistant programs. Go there. We have amazing Angels Over Sandpoint, who, gosh, they do so much for this community in terms of seeking support too.
I think there's something very important in what you just said, and that is that it's not only about the moment of crisis, and yet we tend to speak of these problems or challenges as if they're always perpetual crisis. And there is a continuum, and there is a buildup that things might be addressed before they become a crisis.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the thing that I know in marriage counseling, which is my subspecialty, is the statistics show, like, you should have gotten in 7 years prior. So it's an uphill battle then. But I have a, you know, I love my clients who come in who are like their first year of their marriage or they're still dating. And it's like you get a little bit more prevention going on in that place. And so we do have in some of the schools, we definitely have an elementary school. I know we've been trying to get more and more services in early on. And I think that that's something that specifically that Joe will be bringing to the community, whether it's at Bonner General or in his private practice, which is testing and really being able to assess and identify early what's going on for young people and their families. And that's going to be a huge, like we haven't really had somebody who works with that 11 to 18 range to do psych testing and really identify what's going on. So that's going to be a huge piece that grows.
So one of the things we want to touch on a little bit is the mythology surrounding the whole topic. And I know that's something we touched on a little bit last time. And maybe before we take our bottom of the half hour break, tell us about some of the myths and how they prevent seeking treatment.
Well, that the first myth is you don't need anybody else. You can do it on your own. You know, that rugged individualism. That piece is that's probably the most dangerous piece that I see out there, actually, is that you can do this all by yourself, and you should be able to do this all by yourself. So the more that we can start the conversation of, it's okay to ask for help. It's okay for you to seek support. You know, we're not going to punish, like what Joe kind of alluded to, like you're not going to get punished for going to a teacher or going to a parent. As a community, really supporting and surrounding in that mentality of, thank you so much for asking. I'm so grateful to be here for you. Mm-hmm. We're going to get through this together, sort of mentality. You know, in terms of small mountain towns in the West, the other piece of it is access, getting access to mental health. That's a big issue. Again, another great addition for Joe into our community. The more and more we have access to mental health providers and getting those connections, that's going to be a big one. And then specifically mountain towns, one of the biggest issues is access to firearms in the West. That kind of increases our issues. But some other myths around seeking counseling in general, Phil, is we're always going to ask you how you feel. Sometimes we do. We do get there at some point, but it's not always like, well, come in and tell us how you feel. How are you feeling? What do you think about your mother? That's not always how it goes anymore. We know now through science that skills are really important. How do we develop coping skills, mindfulness skills, communication skills? And sometimes that's where we need to go. And Joe alluded to one, which is opposite action. If you feel lethargic and tired and you just want to lay down on the couch, do the opposite. And that's a skill. And that's a huge one. So therapy isn't always talking about your feelings.
I think one or two that come to my mind that prevent people from seeking treatment is being afraid that they're going to be diagnosed as crazy. Okay. You know, like this is the idea that you're somehow going to be able to see into my brain, like going to parties and saying that you're a psychologist is not much fun.
And you're there to certify. You're certifying their crazy.
Yeah, yeah. All of a sudden, like you can see in the conversation, just like this blankness that happens across. I can't reveal any secrets.
Consider an opportunity to get free advice.
Well, that's the opposite, right? That's the other side is all of a sudden, you get the life story. And I'm like, oh my goodness. I bill by the hour. But in all actuality, I mean, everyone, not everyone, but a lot of people are certainly just afraid that all of a sudden you're going to see into their soul and find something that, will reveal that, they're a horrible human being. And that's not the point. That's not the purpose of this. And you alluded to earlier, like, why do people go and seek treatment? Well, I think about optimal level of health, right? Mm-hmm. Like, no matter where you're starting at, and some people are starting at rock bottom. Some people are just wanting a tune-up, so to speak. And all of those are worthwhile. You know, it doesn't matter the reason for coming. It just matters that you're there, right?
Are you able to help people with management plans? And I'm thinking particularly of folks with chronic and severe mental illness, but some of what I used to do was teach symptom identification, mm-hmm. signs of decompensation, identify triggers, and how to plan for that kind of thing. You do that kind of work also with the broad spectrum of your patients?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Make a plan. Yes. Mm-hmm. Identify, make a plan. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that I think, especially for our young people, I think that Joe's going to be able to bring to our community is that ability to assess and identify and make a better plan.
So this is probably a good opportunity. We're going to take a short music break, and then we're going to come back and talk about some of the things that can be done, some of the resources available, and a little bit about what that plan might look like. So the helpful side of the hour. If you're just tuning in, this is 88.5 KRFY in Ponderay, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. We are podcasting the show. It'll be available later this week on our website, krfy.org. And we've been joined this morning in the studio here with Amanda Thomas and Dr. Joe Wassef talking about community mental health issues and opportunities. We're going to take a break and listen to a little bit of Keb Mo. Keb Mo, Perpetual Blues Machine, which is sort of what we're trying to avoid, someone getting caught into that spiral. And if they start to, identifying it and pulling them back out. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the tools for prevention and for treatment. But I think one of the things just to say out right up front is many people don't pay attention to what those resources are until they're needed. So I think part of the goal here with the morning show is to create awareness of opportunities within our community. And so hopefully people really take note of these and share them and keep them in mind.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. We have a great community, as I've said before, you know, whether it's going online or going to your family physician, who as a treatment community, we're all really highly motivated and highly skilled to provide support services. So Sandpoint Psychotherapy, Kinixu, I'm blanking on all the other names that I just said. North Idaho Children's Mental Health. They have a huge team that particularly works with young people, Alliance. And then we just have our private providers, which is typically they're either paneled through your insurance or they are online, or friends and healthcare providers will recommend private providers. And then we were just talking about Optum has a whole new initiative that's going out for serving the Medicaid population.
And we were talking a little bit on the break, too, and I'd let someone who's more knowledgeable about their services, NAMI Far North.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, NAMI Far North is a great support group, and for families who have a loved one who has a mental health issue, a mental illness.
And Sandpoint Community Resource Center can be reached by phone at 208-920-1840 or on the web at sandpointcommunityresourcecenter.com. And I think it's .com or maybe .org. You can try either one. But they have a directory, a self-help directory that you can access. Has a very detailed listing of all the providers of counseling and mental health services in our community. And it also has information on how to link to Optum if your payment mechanism is Medicaid. So anyway.
So there's a spectrum of services, and let's walk through some of them real specifically so people have the the resources available to them that include both those that are in crisis as well as a longer range look to preventing that moment of crisis.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a newer organization that kind of has come through due to the number of suicides that we've had in the last 3 years, which is the North Idaho Crisis Services. And that number is 208-946-5595. There is a national line, which is 1-800-SUICIDE. That's a 24-hour suicide prevention. You can pick that up any point in time. You can pick up the phone and or I guess not pick up the phone anymore
anywhere
because
in the
we
US.
Don't pick up we don't pick up the phone. I guess we do pick up our phones,
do.
But
yeah, we pull them out of our pocket.
We do pull them out of our pockets,
desk,
exactly. Yeah. And then we also have our Sandpoint Police non-emergency line if you need to check on somebody. If you're worried about somebody and you're not sure if it's a crisis, you can call that number, which is 208-263-2946. And that you want to, when you do that, you want to say, I'm worried about somebody. I'd like to do a mental health check. You can do that. And then now we also have a text line. So you can text START to 741-741 from anywhere in the U.S. and you can get text support.
And that's for literally anything, any crisis. So that's a really worthwhile one to repeat, I think. Text START to 741-741 anywhere in the U.S.
Correct. Yep. So we are trying to use technology to our in our favor to help mitigate crisis response.
And there's always the 911 number.
Absolutely. 911, absolutely. If you believe that you're a danger to yourself or others, or you believe somebody else is, please don't hesitate to contact them. And then we have things like NAMI, NAMI Far North. We have, a variety of like underground kindness that's in the schools. We have, our community has quite a reputation of really providing courses and workshops like mindfulness-based stress reduction. We have just outreach and people who want to help, and both in the private sector and the public sector. And that's why it's always a little bit shocking to me when people say they don't know who to turn to, because I feel... But again, I'm a mental health provider, so I'm surrounded by it and surrounded by the conversation. But we just have for our population and our location, we have some pretty profound resources and a profound commitment to being there for people. So,
and maybe it isn't so much of I don't know who to turn to, as I don't know how to find somebody. Right. Yeah. You know, accessing is a whole
it is
huge issue for a variety of needs,
especially when you're in crisis or you're really questioning how you're thinking and feeling. It's really hard, and that is where having advocates and support people in your life can really minimize that.
So I know one of the topics we want to talk about was whether or not there are adequate resources, and it sounds like there are. But the access could still be a concern. Do we have adequate avenues for access? Are we doing enough to make sure that information is available? If not, what can we do?
Well, that's partly why I've been coming back, is trying to get that out there as much as possible and change the conversation. I think it's, you know, I've worked in a bunch of mental health settings, from consulting to residential treatment to private practice. And the moment that I want to capture most in my heart and my soul is when somebody makes that first phone call. And so I think really that North Idaho crisis line that's started, I think that's a really important piece of getting access, because that first call is the scariest call. It's like Joe said, like, people are so afraid to be perceived as crazy. And that's really like a really sad and scary moment. But when your distress gets so extreme and you actually reach out, we need to capture them there. Do we have enough providers? There's waiting lists. I mean, that's true. It's hard across the country, not just in Sandpoint, but having enough providers to give the support that is needed, it's an issue. It absolutely is an issue, and Sandpoint is not unique in that issue.
Mm-hmm. And it is particularly, I think, with the Medicaid population, it's extremely limited. I know there's two new psychiatric nurse practitioners practicing out of Dr. Bonin's office over on Division. I think it's Woodland Medical something or other. If you just Googled Woodland Medical for Sandpoint, I'm sure the number would come up. But and they will see children also. Mm-hmm. They're seeing children and adults. And so that's helping to fill the need. But as you said, there's only one psychiatrist in town, Dr. Johnson, who's seeing adults. And
well, we have to put that pressure. We put that pressure then onto our general practitioners, our family practice people. And that's a heavy burden for them to carry. Mm-hmm. And so one of the really cool things, can we talk about that? With you?
Sure. It's a couple of years off.
It's a couple of years off. But and I know I mentioned this back in December, is we are trying to find ways to meet that need, both locally and on a national basis. And so psych nurse practitioners is a new subspecialty that specifically is a nurse practitioner who is studying psychiatry. Joe is going to be getting trained. Also, there's a new addition to psychologists that they can go back for 2-year training, I believe, so that they can also be a prescriber for psychopharm, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what we call psychopharm. So that's the medication piece of it. So that's, again, our community is trying to meet that need, psych nurse practitioners, getting people like Joe trained up to be able to meet that need. And again, prevention. Like, how can we get there so that we don't have to go down that route?
So the risk of opening a topic that could probably be a whole show in itself.
Okay, go ahead.
On the spectrum of things, I know you wanted to talk today about stress.
Yes.
As really a significant problem that sometimes doesn't get the attention it deserves.
Absolutely. Stress is, if we learned how to manage our stress earlier on, again, ounce of prevention, right? If we can identify stress, if we can learn coping strategies for stress, then we would be preventing not just mental health crises, but over the long term, we'd also be preventing chronic physical illness. There's a very clear body of research that's out there now that clearly links childhood adversity, childhood stress, to adult obesity, diabetes, cancer, autoimmune issues. We know that now. So the more and more that we can be working to do prevention early on, and talking about whatever is stressing you out, doesn't really matter. Go seek support from a professional provider, please, because as soon as we start talking about it, we start releasing all the good hormones in our body that help us absorb that cortisol, which then helps us decrease our internal inflammation, which leads to pretty significant diseases and stress on our community, stress on families. So that's kind of my big plug about stress. Do you have anything? Joe's like, I can feel him. He's over here. You guys can't see him, but I can feel him. He's like, I want to say something, Amanda. Go for it, Joe.
I would be happy to say something. I think also we got on and off the one previous topic that I just wanted to also say, Amanda, and you would probably be in a better position to address this than I would, but we were on the topic of paying for mental health services, and we jumped on
absolutely.
And off, you know, Medicare, Medicaid, mm-hmm. you know, earlier. But whether regardless of what your insurance is, or whether you have insurance or not, and mm-hmm. You know, there are individuals in our community that will, you know, operate on sliding scale, which basically mm-hmm. means that regardless of what you have, they'll be able to provide services. And, mm-hmm. and you, would you mind speaking
yeah,
to that
absolutely.
A little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, so, and actually, Jason Munsky, who also does KRFY mm-hmm. on Thursday nights, he's like, Amanda, make sure you plug the middle class. I'm like, okay, sorry. So because we do have wonderful services for Medicaid, which Optum, and we do have a lot of private funders who will support people who don't have the money to seek mental health services. And then we have the very affluent who can access mental health services. But in the middle range, you know, you have your insurance coverage, but we also have, our community does a lot of sliding scale. In the private outpatient services, we do a lot of sliding scale, and that's usually based on your annual income and the number of dependents. Everybody runs that a little bit differently. And that's really based on whoever your provider is in terms of how much they're willing to slide. I know for me, when I was in private practice, especially when the recession hit, I was so grateful to have a sliding scale, because all of a sudden, you know, I had people who lost their jobs, who didn't have any money and didn't have insurance. And so it was like, how can we just slide our scale down mm-hmm. to meet you and meet your need in that moment? And then, and you know, our community, again, we're really lucky. Our community, I have never really been taken advantage of with doing sliding scale. And people really do want help and are really grateful for it.
You mentioned employee assistance programs a little while ago, and I think that's a really underutilized service, because mm-hmm. it's available not only to the employee, but to the family members
yes.
mm-hmm. in most cases.
Yes.
And, you know, I suggested that to a few people who are having kid issues, you know, and they went, oh, I didn't know my kids could do it, too. And I go, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's always an important thing to look mm-hmm. at, too. Of course, that's for the working person, yeah. but mm-hmm. and if their employer has it. But
mm-hmm. Well, that's and I mean, even with that, we still have, you know, Angels Over Sandpoint, Underground Kindness. We have a variety of private organizations that do try to support getting people into services if they don't have the money to do so.
And Angels does it through the Health and Welfare 211 number.
Mm-hmm.
They aren't distributing those funds individually themselves.
Right.
And so 211 is a very, very important resource mm-hmm. for people. It's access to somebody called the Navigator
mm-hmm.
who has this magic pot of money that is not public assistance related. And mm-hmm. We can help people get through that process at the Resource Center, too.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting close to needing to wrap up, and we've thrown a lot of information out there, especially about resources. And I'd imagine someone listening is just utterly confused as to where to go to. What's the best number for them to call or place to go to sort out what they can do next? What is the next? What are the range of options? Is there one number on here you would recommend?
Sadly, no. I guess I would say you guys do. You provide
Sandpoint
you
Community guys, Resource Center.
Yeah, Sandpoint yeah. Community Resource Center. You guys kind of have a whole
big database.
Okay. But
and if, we refer. We're not a service provider.
And to contact Sandpoint Community Resource Center.
Center.com or 208-920-1840. There's a message phone, but there's a staffer every Monday through Friday from 10 to 2.
Thank mm-hmm. you, Carrie. Any closing thoughts? Anything we didn't quite finish the loop on that we want to close now?
Good We're luck always to welcome you to come and back. Your new gig.
Thanks so much, Carrie.
For sure. Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you for coming in, Dr. Joe Wassef and Amanda. And we'll have to figure out when the next most timely point is to come back and talk. It's a continual conversation we need to have.
Absolutely, it is. Thank you guys so much.
We're going to take a short music break and come back and look a little bit at the community calendar. And here we go. I think we've got queued up a little Jackie Wilson to leave us on a little higher note.